towards the body of the function, and allow mind and feet be only be united with all the illuminated souls before me. We want to welcome everyone to this wonderful and historic occasion. We are reminded of the opportunities that arose in the days of Hiranyakashipu, Hazrat Imam Khan, with the distribution of publications through print, the opportunities to broadcast through radio, and now these new evolutions of technology that are available to us in spreading the message. If I may just congratulate you all, as we are all pioneers in this great experiment, and we will have a recording of it for you to all view in the future. Please keep in mind that this media is a media that is not interactive in the same way that Skype is. At the end, we'll have an opportunity for question and answer, and there is a Skype window, a chat window at the bottom of the browser window in which you're viewing this video broadcast. I'd like to give you a little bit of background about how this new evolution in spreading the message has unfolded. Last weekend, as many of you know, we celebrated Visalak Day, which is the remembrance of the passing of our Murshid Imam Khan. And we had an unprecedented participation online via Skype. Part of that was stimulated by our regular viewers, plus many people that joined us because Murshid Hidayat Imam Khan was giving a special talk to us that day. And what happened was our airport, our router, got overloaded with all the calls, and so we thought, oh my goodness, we want our visitors to feel welcomed and at home and at ease when they join us. And so a friend of ours in Minneapolis expressed an idea to offer broadcast through this technology. So we began experimenting right away, the curious beings that Cabrera and myself are, and we try to do our best to master this technology. So at the end, again, at the bottom of the browser window, there is a feedback link. You might want to give us some feedback, or I'm sure we'll be in touch via email, Skype, some other modalities. So the subject today is on the universal brotherhood, sisterhood message of Hazrat Imam Khan. I want to again remind you before we get into the subject and the actual class session that this is an experiment, and your feedback will be welcomed, and we will try to make accommodations along the way. Because this broadcast is streaming in one direction, I don't hear you and I don't get your immediate feedback, so feedback will have to come later. So I just wanted to give you some caveats to understand the context and how this transmission is different than Skype. If we could begin together with a moment of silence, and in that silence, we invoke the presence of all the masters, saints, and prophets, all the holy ones, the illuminated ones, whether known or unknown to us, who have offered to us an illuminating vibration of wisdom and compassion. We especially invoke the presence of pure worship Hazrat Imam Khan. And here I offer my gratitude for Murshid's message in my life, and also the presence of Murshid Hidayat Inayatullah, who has taken up the task as my own spiritual advisor and my Sufi father, as well as Murshid Aziza, who I consider my Sufi mother. Thank you to you all. Wherever you are in the world, let us join together, heart to heart, mind to mind, as we recite the Sufi invocation of Hazrat Inayatullah. Towards the one, the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being, united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of God. The format for the class will be much like we hold for the Meditations on the Message class, and we will have readings intermixed with practices that we can participate in together. And so we begin with this reading, which is a reading that we shared last week, and for which many of you have asked to cite the reference and to hear it again and again. This is from the complete works of Pir Murshid Hazrat Inayat Khan, the original texts, Lectures on Sufism, Volume 1, 1923. It is from a paper called Gita 6, Dhyana Meditation. And I would like to speak a little bit about the meaning of those words in a few moments. Murshid's words. The brotherhood and sisterhood of Sufis is not determined by time or space. Unity is beyond limitations. When the heart overflows with love, the body and mind are charged with magnetism. And so great is the power of this magnetism that it can benefit others thousands of miles away. When the heart overflows with love, the body and mind are charged with magnetism, and so great is the power of this magnetism that it can benefit others thousands of miles away. Yes, it is possible to concentrate on loved ones, and through meditation, when one is bathed in the ocean of divine love, such factors as distance and time do not matter. And so we unite with each other in this moment, and yet we are not even limited by that, and we certainly are not limited by our distance. So just a brief commentary on these words, Gita Dhyana, and a little bit of background of these papers. This is a series of papers, and they have a bit of a complex history, and I'd like to offer you some explanation. When Pir Murshid Inayat Khan was in San Francisco in the spring of 1923, he gave many public lectures. And those have survived in, or some of them have survived and have been culminated in this text, the complete works. But at that time, he also gave the privilege to his students to offer private classes. Those were for initiates, those that had been initiated by Murshida Rabia Martin on behalf of Hazrat Inayat Khan in his absence. And it may be noteworthy that she kept that work alive for 12 years in Murshid's absence while he traveled
in other parts of the world, not returning for 12 years back to America. As I said, some of these lectures were for the more advanced students that had been studying during these 12 years. And this is the term that are given to these papers, the Gita Dhyana. There is some speculation, according to the original transcripts, it is said and it is noted that Anayat Khan asked or said, "I'm not sure if anyone here knows how to take shorthand." By saying that, he wasn't requiring someone to take it, but subtly suggesting that someone take up that task. And take up that task they did, for we see in the hand of both Murshida Rabia Martin and then Samuel Lewis, who was to become Murshid Samuel Lewis, that they have written down these notes of these lectures. So it's wonderful to hear a little bit of the history of the origin of these papers, when they were delivered, to whom they were delivered, and also to see the interconnectedness of the root coming from an icon that has manifested in these beautiful flowers and branches and fruits of the different Sufi organizations over time. Now a little bit about the words Gita and Dhyana. In studying the text of Hazrat Anayat Khan, we see often that he talks about Shiva, Lord Shiva, who is known to be the Lord of the Yogis. And those of you that are familiar with the picture of Shiva, and you may want to at some point make a note to yourself during this talk, and if you don't know the image of Lord Shiva, you may want to find one. Because he has this beautiful image. It appears as a fountain that's coming out of the top of his head. But I have to say, there is a beautiful spot high in the Himalayan waters, at the Himalayan, probably in the Himalayas. And from there, from under the earth, the water comes up and begins its descent down, 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 becoming the river Ganga, Ganges. It's said that this river is sacred because of her acceptance of all. She accepts everything, not because of her purity. She's not pure at all, but she accepts everything. And this beautiful fountain from Lord Shiva's head is that sacred spot. And if I may say so myself, I have had the great privilege of visiting that spot in India. So in this moment, I am tuning to that sacred spot. If we tune together, perhaps you can feel the resonance and the vibration of that beautiful spot at the crown of Lord Shiva that we see on this earth high in the Himalayas. So Murshid often, as I said, talks about Lord Shiva. He makes reference to this yoga. And this yoga was then chronicled by the great yogi Patanjali. Some people may call him Patanjali. But he made a great treatise of the eight different methods of yoga based on the yoga of Lord Shiva. And it may be of interest to you to know that there, as I said, are eight methods of yoga, each one successively progressive. You may also find it interesting to note, and you may at this point also be asking yourself, why is Maria saying all of this? But I'm about to tell you. Gianna, remember the name of this paper that I just read from? Gita Dhyana. Dhyana is the seventh of those yogis, that are chronicled by Patanjali. The seventh of them. The eighth being samadhi, complete meditative absorption. And so Murshid has also in this, there are notations that also say Gita Dhyana, but also the English equivalent, meditation. Now the story becomes just a little bit more interesting, and you will see this sort of, I'm taking you a little bit on the flow of the river Ganges. We're on this great journey. So we have Mahadeva, springs from his crown, Patanjali commits it to a canon. Later, Lord Buddha has also taken this teaching and used it in his methodologies taught to his students. That tradition was kept orally alive century after century until it was in the 9th century, before the Common Era, I should say, chronicled in a canon, the Pali Canon, that we still see today. Of course, that was quite a few years after the passing of Shakyamuni Buddha. And I will also note here that we have the great privilege of having these direct teachings of our Murshid. There is no question about it. They are direct. They were from him. He went through them after the lectures were given. He helped edit them with the help of some of his students, and we have them here today. There was no question about the authenticity or the direct transmission of these teachings. Please keep that in mind. Then we have the emergence of the Bhagavad Gita. And in the Bhagavad Gita, Gita Dhyana, I explained Dhyana, now I explain Gita, Gita song, song of God, Bhagavad God, Gita song. And in that, there's a distillation of these eight yogas into four yogas. Karma yoga, which is the yoga of action. Jhana yoga, which is the yoga of wisdom and intellectual endeavor. Bhakti yoga, which is the yoga of devotion. And, wait for it, Dhyana yoga, the yoga of meditation. Again, the name Murshid gave to this paper. I have just a little bit more before I get into more readings of Murshid. Then we have this connection between the Gathas and the Gitas. The Gathas, as we know, are 17 hymns, one could say, again, songs, like in Gita, of the great prophet of Persia, Zoroaster, or some would say Zarathustra, who wrote the Zendavesta. And I would like for you to know very much that these Gathas were in the verse of a metered nature, a poetical nature, and they come from an ancient Iranian language, which is a subgroup of Indo-European languages that are Persian and Gujarati. Gujarati is very significant here because we know that Murshid was from that area in India. And that this particular language of which I'm speaking, that the Gathas was written in, that comes from the Persian Gujarati blend, is dependent and has its roots in the Vedic Sanskrit, which of course goes way back to the Upanishads. All of these things are inherent in these two words that Murshid gave to these advanced students on meditation. Gita Dhyana. In two words, what he's telling us of the history and origins of his message. I hope that you find it as fascinating as I do and that you're awake. Shall we ring a bell for you? Here, we'll do that. Bing! Okay. So now I would like to give you again Pure Murshid Hazratanayak Khan's words. Murshid was asked many times, is Sufism Muslim? Is Sufism Muslim? And I know many of you have been asked this question, and if you go to the dictionary or the encyclopedia, there will say it. And if it's in print, then it must be true. And it will say it's the mystical dimension of Islam. But is Murshid's message that? After this explanation I just gave, I hope you get another view. And here is how Murshid answers that question. Is Sufism Muslim? And this passage I am reading now, or about to read, is from, you don't have to go very far, it's in Sufi Message Volume 1, The Way of Illumination, on the subject of the Sufi. So Murshid's response to, is Sufism Muslim? He says, if the following of Islam is understood by the obligatory adherence to a certain rite, if being a Mohammedan means conforming to certain restrictions, how can the Sufi be placed in that category? How can the Sufi be placed in that category? Seeing that the Sufi is beyond all limitations of this kind. So far as not accepting the Quran, the Sufi recognizes scriptures which others disregard. You see, even then, this was a challenge. This word, this association, which is true for some. One could say, yes, some Muslims are Sufis, but we also can say not all Sufis have taken this up this path of strict Islam. Again, Murshid says, so far as not accepting the Quran, the Sufi recognizes scriptures which others disregard. But the Sufi does not follow any special book. Except here, I might say, the holy scripture of nature, the holy book of nature, that has the potential to illuminate every soul. Back to Murshid's papers again. But the Sufi does not follow any special book. The shining ones, such as Attar, Shemsa Tabriz, Rumi, Sadi, and Hafiz, have expressed their free thought with a complete liberty of language. To a Sufi, revelation is the inherent property of every soul. To a Sufi, revelation is the inherent property of every soul. There is an unceasing flow of the divine stream, which has neither beginning nor end. Again, please note that that is in Sufi Message Volume Number 1, The Way of Illumination, on the subject of Sufi. If you need to refer to that passage to help you understand when asked this question. Perhaps this will give you some quality of response that can satisfy both your own questions and the questions of your friends and family and associates. What I think is so beautiful is that all these message volumes have really in some ways been condensed in the very potent phrase by phrase that we find in the sacred prayers that an icon has given us. So as a practice, perhaps we could join by first saying aloud, then allowing our voices to become more internalized and soft, and finally entering the silence for a few moments with these beautiful phrases from the Sufi prayer Salat. And when we enter the breath, we can breathe in, absorbing thy light is in all forms, and breathing out from our heart thy love in all beings. For these two phrases encapsulate the whole realization of Sufism. It is there in the universal worship, recognizing all of the great masters and prophets of all the great holy books, and even those unknown to the world. Thy light is in all forms, thy love in all beings. Thy light is in all forms, thy love in all beings. Thy light is in all forms, thy love in all beings. Thy light is in all forms, thy love in all beings. Thy light is in all forms, thy love in all beings. Breathing in, thy light is in all forms. And breathing out from one's heart, thy love in all beings. If I may, I would like to share with you the transmission which Murshid gave on the American radio in 1926. I've often thought about those messages that Murshid was giving in the last year of his life. For when he left for India the last time in 1927, those who were there remember him saying, "If I return." And in some of the last collective interviews of that summer school in 1926, he gave a teaching to his students called Things to Remember. So there is perhaps some subtle indications that Murshid was aware that he would be leaving the earth plane. And so I find that studying those collections of teachings, which have occupied the last few years of my own study, are very potent, very potent. You see subtle shifts in the message. They seem to be very direct and very clear. And so I think this message too offers that insight of how he saw the formation and the dissemination of the message. And again, I say this is in 1926, it was in September of 1926, on the American radio. And I understand that he gave a similar message in Berlin, in Germany. So he was giving this message other places as well. Beloved ones of God, the Sufi message is a message today being given to humanity. It is not a message of the East, but it is the message of the soul. The Sufi word means wisdom, which comes from the root Safiya. It is the work of that wisdom to give the message today to humanity, in order that people may come together in a better understanding, arising beyond the different sections of castes and creeds which divide mankind. The Sufi message is an answer to the cry of humanity today, at this moment, when materialism is all pervading and commercialism is continually on the increase. The Sufi message respects all religions, recognizes all scriptures, regards all prophets held in esteem by large sections of humanity, and is the source and goal of all. Wisdom is one. And so from the Sufi prayer Khatun, we get the beautiful phrase, raise us above the distinctions and differences which divide men. In that phrase, we hear the embodiment of this message of Murshid's. And again, we can join together reading this phrasing. And we can breathe in, raise us above, and then breathe out the distinctions and differences which divide men. And if you don't want to say men in your mind, in your heart, leave it. Just say divide. Raise us above the distinctions and differences which divide men. Women, but really not just that, all of creation. For if we marginalize one aspect, it is like a great web that gets plucked and everything else is influenced. And we see this raises above the distinctions and differences which today, as we were preparing for this broadcast, PBS is streaming through this same technology that we're using live right now in Egypt at the Tahrir Square, the demonstrations and the protest. And I say, to you. Think of it. That we are also transmitting this great message of Nurshid's atmosphere. The vibration is going out. We offer it to those who are in conflict, who are divided by strife, who are fighting their brothers and their sisters. This is a message to the cry of humanity. Raises above the distinctions and the differences which divide. Murshid says in the Social Gathikas number 19, Sufi mysticism, realizing the truth of religion. The mystic says the explanation of the whole of religion is the investigation of the self. It's a very Buddhist concept there. It's not seeking something unknown, although the self is often unknown till we come to realize it. The mystic says the explanation of the whole religion is the investigation of the self. The more one explores oneself, the more one will understand all religions in the fullest light, and all will become clear. Sufism is only a light thrown upon your own religion. Sufism is only a light thrown upon your own religion, like a light brought into a room containing all things you want. The one thing needed was light. And I have had the great fortune of many people saying to me that studying Murshid's message, in fact, has illuminated their own root religion for them. It's not another dogma for us to take up. It's not something to counter what our root is. It's to help us discover more deeply the root of oneself. In the Religious Gathikas number 42, belief and disbelief in God. The idea of Sufism is to bring humanity, nations, and religions now so far apart into harmony and unity by awakening the thought of unity in souls. It is a message not to one community or race only, but the whole humanity. Not a call to join any particular church or religion, but a call to join in the human brotherhood and sisterhood. Think of it. Think how many decades Murshid was giving this message 100 years ago, and how much more work there is to do. Again, from the Religious Gathikas number 32, the God idea. The Sufi message is not a new message. although it strikes the note of the day. It is the re-echo of the same voice heard in all ages. At the present time, when races, nations, and the followers of different religions are all against each other, a word of unity and peace alone can unite all together in God. It's as if Murshid's giving us his guidance, giving us an indication of how to live our lives. It's very beautiful. And we'll be closing the session momentarily, but before we do, and we'll close with the prayer Khatun, and then we'll have some question and answer for those who wish to participate. I'd like to read this very beautiful teaching, again from the complete works of Pir Murshid Hazrat Inayat Khan, original text, Lectures on Sufism, Volume 1, 1923. It is also from the same Gita, number 6, Dhyana, on meditation. And Murshid concludes that teaching to his students by saying this about the prayer Khatun. The words of Khatun, recorded as a prayer, are really assertions of metaphysical realities. The words of Khatun, recorded as a prayer, are really assertions of metaphysical realities. God is the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, who is the Lord of heaven and earth. He opens our hearts, and then we hear his voice, which is constantly coming from within. He opens our hearts, and then we hear his voice, which is constantly coming from within. I pause here to ask you to think very deeply about this. If one can't hear that voice, there's some obscurity. Remember, the path of self-realization. Do what one can with the purification practices every day, with the remembrance that all is God, to help clarify this heart so that the voice becomes very clear, constantly coming from within. He opens our hearts, and then we hear his voice, which is constantly coming from within. He gives us his great goodness, and he teaches us his loving forgiveness. These are Murshid's authentic words. Keep in mind that the formal language of the day used words like he and his without any real reference to sex or sexuality. This was a formal language. Don't allow oneself to be fooled or disappointed in this choice of words. And Murshid was speaking the Queen's English, so to speak. It's a formal methodology or expression of the English language. So, he gives us his great goodness and he teaches us his loving forgiveness. He raises us above the distinctions and differences which divide men. Sends us the peace of his divine spirit and unites us all in his perfect being. This is the state of God and becomes the maqam. Maqam could be described as the spiritual station, the spiritual realization. This is the state of God and becomes the maqam of the sage. By placing himself in God's position, and by maintaining that attitude, he attains to the first kind of cosmic consciousness, one of universal love and feeling. All growth of the heart makes this more possible. In meditation, therefore, listen to God speak and record your impression. He's giving directions to his advanced students here, remember. We can take these instructions. In meditation, therefore, listen to God speak and record your impressions. Feel God's love and presence. Perceive God's glory and light. All are there within the heart of man, which is the throne of God. And by constantly maintaining this state, all of life becomes a meditation and a blessing. One more final thought of Murshid's before our concluding prayer, and how much more true this is today under these circumstances, and especially via this technology reaching out to all of us. Remember that unity is strength. Remember that unity is strength, and working for unity of the world is greater strength still. Not yet. Okay. Remember that unity is strength, and working for the unity of the world is greater strength still. This is from the Social Gathikas, number 23, Working for the Sufi Message. In closing, let me just say, may God bless us and unite us all worldwide. May we feel each other, heart to heart and mind to mind, no matter where we are. May we seek to perfect the practice of uniting in his perfect being. And I want to thank you all for being part of this experiment in the new dimensions of spreading the Sufi message of Hazrat Inayat Khan. Remember that unity is strength, and working for the unity of the world is greater strength still. And we conclude now this portion, and before the question and answer, with the prayer, Katun. O thou who art the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the Lord of heaven and earth, open our hearts that we may hear thy voice which constantly cometh from within. Disclose to us thy divine light, which is hidden in our souls, that we may know and understand life better. Most merciful and compassionate God, give us thy gratefulness. Teach us thy loving forgiveness. Raise us above the distinctions and differences which divide men. Send us the peace of thy divine spirit and unite us all in thy perfect being.